We've got Trump derangement syndrome, Stacey Abrams for president, plus an exclusive report from uprising Joe Biden correspondent Tim Donner on Vice President and Dr. Jill Biden on this episode of The Uprising.
LibertyNation.com. They're the resistance, but we are the uprising with Scott Cosenza and Tim Donner.
There's not going to be a President Donald Trump.
Hey, a president. Can you believe it?
I love the poorly educated.
The voters have guaranteed themselves slavery, economic disaster.
I can't believe I'm losing to this guy.
You could put half of Trump's supporters into what I call the basket of deplorables.
I have never met with Russians.
Our elected representatives can abuse subordinates and then secretly use a slush fund of our money to pay them off.
Black Lives Matter, the Antifa movement, is interested in preserving the fabric of America.
Welcome to The Uprising, a podcast of LibertyNation.com. This is your host, Scott Cosenza. And what a week it's been for those pining for Donald Trump's tax records and pining about and fretting over the Mueller report and all those bad actors that we have to really discover before the next election. And neither of those two things could be about embarrassing Donald Trump or frustrating his attempts to win re-election or keep other Republicans out of office. No, no, no. It's all so we can learn and find out what happened to our democracy. Except, of course, if any of that inquiry may point to somebody away from Donald Trump or Republicans. So because I really never hear anybody talk about it in the legacy media, I think it's always important to remind everyone that the only reason that these people are seeking Donald Trump's tax returns is because they believe once published, they can use the information to damage him politically because he paid so little as a percentage of his wealth and income tax. And they're right. But they're lying when they tell you it has anything to do about Russia or the election or anything else. Now, how do I know this? How do I divine what goes on in the hearts of progressives and Democrat political operatives? Well, no, I can't divine their intentions and their true feelings. But what I know for sure is that anybody who says that they need Donald Trump's tax records to find out what interests he may have, what financial interests he may have and benefit from, is lying to you. And the reason why they're lying is because the President of the United States has to file, and candidates for President of the United States have to file, an exhaustive financial disclosure. Donald Trump has filed one. In fact, he's filed three before he ran and every year he's been president. In that document, it discloses every financial interest that the president or candidate has. Donald Trump's entry, in fact, I'm looking at the one from, I think, 2017, there are over 500 different LLCs, corporations, partnerships, you name it, that he has a financial interest in. You can go and look up their names. You can find out who the secretary, the treasurer is, the amount. All this stuff is available for anybody who wants to take a look at it. It's not a secret. So anybody who tells you that they need this tax information for something other than to use his tax rate and payments as a cudgel against him politically is simply being dishonest. All you'd have to do is come up with a single company or partnership or enterprise that he has a financial interest that he didn't disclose on that form, and that would be big trouble for Donald Trump. So we're expected to believe basically that he was in league with the Russians and maybe some oligarchs and some funny business, but then chose to what? File tax returns on that? He wanted to pay tax on the dirty money? Come on. It doesn't make any sense. And if there was a press that wasn't just aligned against Donald Trump, you'd know it before now if you didn't already. Because instead of breathlessly reporting the Democrats' demands for this information, they might ask, well, have you read the financial disclosure report? And how would this be more instructive or informative for you? Alas, that's not what we hear. But you have the uprising for it, I suppose. Well, if it's not about Russian collusion, then what is it about? The next election. It has to do with embarrassing him so that he doesn't win re-election. And I think that's a lot about what we're seeing now with the Mueller report. Well, there's sort of two branches of that. There's the Trump derangement syndrome branch, and then there's the political election branch. How I think that breaks out is there's a certain universe of people who really did think that there was going to be some evidence of Donald Trump being a Russian asset or spy. The sort of, maybe Rachel Maddow's of the world and certainly the people that were glued to her program that have now abandoned it. And they are convinced that because they're convinced, just like the divinity of their God, that Donald Trump was a Russian colluder, that it is a Russian agent or Russian asset. And no matter what you tell them, they're never going to believe otherwise. So if you tell them that the summary says that he isn't or shows that he isn't, well, then it must be buried in the details. And then once the actual report's released, we'll hear more about how, well, it must have been left out of the details. But there'll be no peace for them. But then the other side is, I think, the more common, and that's the ones who are looking to use this information for political gain, because that's their stock in trade. I haven't decided for myself whether I think the report should be released in its entirety or unredacted or not. And one of the main reasons why, or in fact, perhaps the sole reason why, is because when Special Counselor Mueller takes these people before the grand jury and asks them questions about themselves and their dealings, they can't lie and they can't remain silent if they want to stay out of jail. So they have to tell him. And to call the subpoena power and testimonial, the demands for testimony that a special counsel can bring to a potential suspect or witness invasive is an understatement. That we know, or reasonably can know, that Donald Trump was not an asset, did not collude with Russians, or was in league to spy with Russia against the interests of the United States, or his top deputies and lieutenants in the campaign. Well, then you can say that, well, the information that the special counsel has gleaned from them, to the exclusion of that which has been referred for criminal referral, is private information. And who they had business dealings with, who they had extramarital or otherwise relations with, is not the business of the public, when they would have to have disclosed private facts in the course of the investigation. And it's reasonable for those people, I think, to expect that their private facts should be held private. So while there can be very good reasons for demanding the report's release, there can also be solid reasons for saying some of the material presented in the report should remain redacted, and it's not appropriate to release it publicly, even if it doesn't implicate national security. But the behavior of government actors, well, now that's an interesting question. They don't have that privacy interest in what they've undertaken to do on the public's dime, in the public's name. The derangement syndrome sufferers, the naturally occurring ones, the Maddow group, and also the political motivated ones that are propagating it, don't seem to be interested in that latter part of the inquiry, though. Here's the Democrat Senate Minority Leader Dick Durbin and member of the Judiciary Committee on NBC News.
Well, I think there should be a complete disclosure of the Mueller report. I was standing in the subway in Chicago on Friday, and a lady came up to me named Deborah, and she said, "We paid for that inquiry. Why can't we see the report?" She's not a professional politician by any means, but I think she speaks for most of America. I don't want to dwell on it, but I think it's important we at least see what Bob Mueller produced.
I think most of America cares about whether Donald Trump is a Russian spy, because that's what you had them wondering about. And the rest of it is just the details. Well, how many Americans are going to read this report? I mean, most journalists aren't going to read it, so I will, because I'm a glutton for punishment. But most Americans, no, they're not going to read it. Maybe they want a real summary that was detailed by somebody who's not a direct appoint from the president, and that makes sense. But I don't hear such a clamor for it from my neighbors and friends. What about getting into the whole genesis of the false report to begin with? Can we get into that?
You sit on the Judiciary Committee. The chairman there, Republican from South Carolina, Lindsey Graham, has indicated he wants to do some investigating of the investigators. How did this get started? He has said he wants to talk about Comey. Are you with him on this? Do you think that's an investigation that's necessary?
I don't want to return to Travelgate, Benghazi, the Clinton emails. You know, I think we can move forward from here. We ought to focus on the counterintelligence aspects of this and the security of the 2020 election.
So Deborah really needs to read the report to understand what went on and what happened with our election. But she doesn't want to know how our country was turned upside down and in some ways paralyzed for years, where the sort of a popular mass delusion that the president was somehow a foreign agent, a Russian agent, or under their control. Deborah doesn't want to hear about that. Nice job with the linking it to Travelgate, a Clinton-era scandal, and Benghazi, an Obama scandal. I, for one, would like to actually get back into both of those, but I recognize I'm perhaps in the majority there. But it might be interesting to find out why the upper echelons of the FBI conspired to ruin Donald Trump's presidency and, in fact, perhaps conspired to see that he be removed from office against his will. Is that maybe worth, could we get a hearing, just a little under oath on that? I mean, we know that the former FBI director James Comey lied under oath to the U.S. Congress. Are you outraged about that perjury? Well, we don't hear it from you, do we? What about from some of the Democrats who would be president and replace the Donald to our betterment? Senator Nice, Amy Klobuchar, was on ABC News where they asked her if she believed that water was wet.
The investigation did not establish that members of the Trump campaign conspired or coordinated with the Russian government in its election interference activities. You obviously, I know, want to see the full report, but do you have any reason to doubt that principal conclusion? And that's the big one, that there was no collusion between the Trump campaign and the Russians.
I want to see the report. All we have is a 4-page summary. And I think the major reason that we need to see the report right now, in addition to getting all the details, is to know what we should do to protect our elections and to protect our democracy going into 2020.
Love the refusal to answer a direct question. Does she have any reason to doubt the principal conclusion? The most important thing, the whole thing, right? The whole shebang. I mean, sure, the Russians bought a couple $1,000s worth of Facebook ads and sent a spoof email or 3 million. But was Trump a Russian spy? I mean, that's why we got into this whole shindig, right?
Certainly much more to learn. But we do know directly from Mueller, I mean, his words quoted exactly that he found no evidence of a conspiracy between members of the campaign or the president and the Russian government. I'm just asking, do you accept that conclusion? Fully understanding you want to see much more, but do you accept that conclusion from the special counsel?
Jonathan, I am a former prosecutor, and I believe in looking at evidence. I don't have the report. I think it is important that the Justice Department announce that they're going to give us the report, and then I can make that assessment myself. But I think the main thing here is the public wants to see the report. 420 members of the House of Representatives unanimously voted that they want to see the report. So then let's see the report.
When the report that she reads accurately states the quoted text that Barr released in his letter, that Mueller himself says there's no Russian collusion with Trump or his people and the Russian government, is she then going to demand the actual evidence in terms of what, grand jury transcripts? Is she going to demand bank account statements? I mean, the report is the report. Barr quotes from the report for the key part, the only part that matters. Not good enough for her, except that she is a former prosecutor, and I think we all know that she knows there's no Russian collusion, but because she's running for president and can fundraise off it, and because of the progressives and the moonbats who are totally bought into it, the Rachel Maddow holdouts, well, she can't say no because, or she agrees that there's no collusion, because then those people will think that she's just one of them, quote unquote. No, she has to maintain this idea that there could be some collusion out there, and we have to get the report. And of course, the best thing for them would be to never get the report and to always just ask for it, because then the reality of the no collusion never has to sink in. So it's always, it's like the tax returns. They're always just out there. You can always go back to raise money off them or deflect or attack on that point. It's like a nice security blanket. Well, Klobuchar is running for president of these United States for the Democrat nomination of same, and that will begin our report on the candidates. And, of course, the big news this week, continuing to make news this week, is Joe Biden, and we do have a special report from the Uprising Joe Biden correspondent, former Uprising co-host, Tim Donner. Okay, here we go. Now we are rolling. Okay. Once again, back to the Uprising. We welcome the Uprising's Joe Biden for president, official correspondent.
Wait a minute. For president?
Yeah.
That's above my pay grade. It's just a general Joe Biden correspondent.
The reason why, Tim, we're paying attention to Joe Biden is not because he's the former senior senator from Delaware or because he's the immediate
former
past
vice president.
Immediate past, as I like to say. For the non-professional, Tim, for the person whose beat is not to cover the Biden campaign, this is what the non-professional. I saw Joe Biden get accused by a couple more women of some creepy stuff, and then I saw a tweet or something where Joe Biden came out and basically said, I didn't do anything wrong, but I'm also going to not do it again, and I'll do better in the future. Yeah, that's sort of the sense of it. And the headline I saw today on the Drudge Report, and we're for the sake of the record, I'll say that we're recording this on a Thursday evening. It said, I think it was not Bannon, but Karl Rove, I think it was, saying, don't count out Biden.
You think Rove's prediction will be as accurate as it was for 2016 when on Election Day he said there's no possible way that Donald Trump could get more than 242 electoral votes?
You know, I appreciate your memory on
that one. I didn't recall that. Yes, yeah, I sure did.
Yeah, yeah. Well, all those guys, by the way, are always they're geniuses until the next election when they lose.
Right.
I was watching Carville on Meet the Depressed, or maybe it was this week, whatever, this past week. And I remember when they were saying that to him, like a genius, like to know more about.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he just got, you know, I mean, he was not an idiot, but what happens in the world isn't the machinations of the one guy, whether it's Carville or whether it's, what's his name?
Well, going all the way back to Pat Caddell, who recently passed, getting Jimmy Carter elected. And then Karl Rove. Nobody got credit for Obama because he won it himself. He didn't need a handler particularly.
Right.
Kellyanne Conway gets a lot of credit for Trump, I think. But now we're down a bunny trail. We're off topic. We're off topic geniuses here, you know.
I will redirect the show as it needs redirecting.
Okay.
So I'll take your cue, though. You wish to give your report. Please enlighten us. What do you see the main takeaways from this week's Biden goings-on?
The Joe Biden journey this week included, and by the way, this is an abridged segment because I could have gone, I could have done 15 clips, Scott, without even thinking about it, but I've got it narrowed down to five, okay? And the first one—
And for you and the listener, let me just say, I don't expect that every week we will go this long on Joe Biden from now
you
until—
You said that last week.
I know, it's true.
You said that last week.
We have
week.
To follow the news, Tim. It's event-driven. Go ahead.
All right, so here was the one that really kind of brought the issue to the fore. This was the woman, Lucy Flores, who was running and actually lost pretty badly, not necessarily because of Biden.
Because of the sexual assault, you're saying?
Lieutenant,
go ahead.
Running for lieutenant governor of Nevada back in 2014. And she basically described verbally what she had written about the week before.
It happened also suddenly. We were all lined up next to the stage. Eva was in front of me. Joe Biden was behind me. I'm kind of preparing myself to give these remarks. It's the very last days before the election. And very unexpectedly and out of nowhere, I feel Joe Biden put his hands on my shoulders, get up very close to me from behind, lean in, smell my hair, and then plant a slow kiss on the top of my head.
Creepy.
Slow. I like that it was a slow kiss.
As
too.
It's also called a lingering kiss. Right. Lingering kiss.
Hold on just a second here. I want to do some math with you, okay? Longtime fans of The Uprising will recall our Tim Does Math on the podcast segment. Now, this is not a reiteration of that segment, but there is math involved. Now,
okay.
How many events would you say Vice President Joe Biden attended in an average year of his vice presidency? And by events, I mean, Mr. Vice President, we've got the lacrosse champions from the national whatever right, here sure. for lunch. That kind of a thing. Could be 20 minutes. It could be 2 hours. All in, how many public events per year does the Vice President Joe Biden do? Did he do?
I'm going to say 250.
Okay. I made it double that in my estimation.
Okay. All right.
Because I'm counting the 15 and 20 minute ones. Okay.
Right. And multiple per day, right. for example. Right.
But I'll take your math on it. Fine. I'll do your math. That's 250 events per year. Now, let me ask you a question. Out of every 100 public events.
Okay.
How often does, at the conclusion of that event, some woman text her girlfriend, spouse, dear diary, whatever, and say, not Joe Biden raped me or sexually assaulted me, but just what a creep he is. He made me feel icky or weird or something went down that wasn't kosher. Yeah. What percent out of 100, how many times does that happen at a Joe Biden event?
Out of 100?
Yeah, out of 100 events, how many times does that happen?
Is this a trick question?
No, it's not a trick question.
28?
Oh, okay. 30? That's a little high. I was going to say like two or three.
Okay.
I was going to say like two or three, okay, out of 100. Or maybe even five if you want to go crazy. So let's say five, all right?
Okay.
So five events out of 100. You got 250 events per year. So that means you've got 10, 11, 12 and a half times 8 years. What's 12 and a half times eight, Tim?
That would be the same as 25 times four. That's 100.
Okay. So now you've got 100 women out there. Most of whom are some high-up Democrat type who all have a story about Joe Biden being creepy towards them.
Uh-huh.
Just during the time when he's vice president of the United States. That doesn't include when he was senator creepy. Mm-hmm. And I can tell you what goes on in a Wilmington, Sheridan after hours is probably worse than what happens in the full light of day.
I love the way you made it a Sheridan instead of the Ritz, like mid-level motel.
Wilmington, Tim, come on. So the point of the whole math exercise is to say that if you use my number of 500 a year, then you double that. You know, there's a lot of inventory of women who have stories about Joe Biden being super creepy. And what I suspect is going to happen is those women that have even more creepy stories, they're waiting. Hopefully he'll do the decent thing and not run. But if they don't, then they're motivated to do it. And the reason why I say that so many of them are high-level Democrat women is because some significant minority of them probably have already committed to supporting one of the 42 other candidates for president.
Right.
And you can imagine knowing somebody who's been a candidate for office, how you would treat somebody who brought you news that one of your opponents acted in an inappropriately sexual way. It was like manna from heaven. Your stock just went up in the campaign. So all that is to say, these are going to come more and more frequent. We're going to hear more about creepy Uncle Joe.
Well, you know what's kind of it's not even necessary for that to happen, because anybody who was trolling YouTube this week would see that there are so many creepy Joe Biden video compilations out there that it's not even necessary for much more to come forward. Now, three more came forward today, Thursday or Wednesday, Thursday, beyond the two that we're going to play you here. I got to say, though, I'll defend Joe Biden for 1 minute. Not defend him, but attack Pocahontas, who gets up there and says about Lucy Flores, who we played in that first somebody, I believe Lucy Flores. What does that mean? She believes her based on what? And who cares what she singularly believes is true or not? This is what these women are saying.
Tim,
I believe Christine Blasey Ford.
Why would you insult somebody who genuflected in church? That's what this is. It's a genuflection. This is the church of progressivism and the church of Me Too. And that's, she has to genuflect at it. If she says
but do you have to be so naked about it? I mean, it's
refreshing that she's not better at concealing it.
But,
that would be worse.
All right, now let's get to Amy Lapos. She's the second one that came forward.
Our next hero, speaking truth to power.
This, let's just play it for you here.
He reached over and put his hands behind my head and pulled me close, and I thought, he's going to kiss me. He was still pulling me in, and I was like, oh, okay, I think he is actually going to kiss me. And he started rubbing noses with me, and he was still holding on to my face. I just remember thinking, is he going to kiss me? Like, what's going
Eskimo
on?
Eskimo kisses.
This is the vice president.
Are you kidding me?
I mean, it's so bizarre. Scott, that was a congressional aide, by the way.
Oh, my God.
Now, here's the thing. Okay, Stephanie Carter, who was the wife of Ash Carter.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
I've seen this one. Secretary
of Defense. Okay. We've all seen that. Anybody paying attention has seen
this
that.
That's the double massage. Right. Yes.
That's the double, the 28-second massage. But here's the point. In Stephanie Carter's case, she knew Biden. She was friends with Biden. And she has said it was fine, and I didn't take it that way. And I think there's the division point, Scott. If he knows the person and they're fine with it, okay. But these are women like Lucy Flores and Amy Lampos that he didn't know them from Adam until he saw them there, and then decided he was going to put the grope on.
Yeah. Look, if they have some personal relationship, that's one thing. It's still probably. He's too handsy in a weird way. I mean, just well, like you say, you look at those YouTube videos, that there's something going on there. Couple that with the whole, with the nakedness around the Secret Service agents.
Swimming naked in the White House pool.
But not in the White House, in the Vice President's mansion
that's right.
A female Secret Service detail with him at the pool.
Now, I think this is interesting.
And they complained about it, by the way. He still did it. That's the other thing.
I'm the Vice President.
He's been around it. It's 8 years he's vice president. I could actually see it, him being around it so long that he kind of forgets that they're there or whatever. But then, like, somebody reminds him.
And he still does it. Yeah, he still does it. But he did apologize. And I want to make one element of his apology that's worth noting.
You know, social norms have begun to change. They've shifted. And the boundaries of protecting personal space have been reset. And I get it. I get it. I hear what they're saying. I understand it, and I'll be much more mindful. That's my responsibility, and I'll meet it.
First of all, Scott, social norms are changing, okay? Now, this is an interesting point, because he's just kind of, he tried to apologize, whatever. Mm-hmm. But what he's saying is that all of that touching was okay before.
Right.
He's saying that, you know, come on, Lucy.
Yeah.
I mean, in the old days, I think it was fine.
Of course, I was a racist in 1982. It was a long time ago, you know?
He's basically saying that, you know, that was just fine. And, okay, you want to change? All right, I'll go along with it. I mean, that's almost an implicit message there. I don't know whether people have taken it that way. But there's so much stuff.
One thing I saw this week, I guess it was maybe an attempt to sort of rehabilitate him a little bit, and it was Jill Biden, and she came in.
Excuse me, Scott. It's Dr. Jill Biden.
Right. Dr.
Jill
Biden. Excuse me, Tim. Yeah. But they said, oh, she's affectionate too. And then they had a bunch of pictures of him, like, hugging men,
nice
too,
try.
To say, like, see, he does it with fellas, too. Like, it's okay.
right.
No. It's a creep show all the way around.
It was creepy 30 years ago, and it's just as creepy today, no matter what the political climate is. John Stewart, okay, and John
getting
Stewart.
Getting our time machines back to what year is this?
This is 2000, and is it 14 or 15? This is 2014.
Okay,
this is 2014, and it's entire. So this Biden groping thing, the creepy Joe, is not something new. That's the point of this. John Stewart did this back in 2014, and it was all about him giving the 28-second shoulder massage to Stephanie Carter.
Hey, you seem tense.
What he was
is
saying.
Is it the stress of me groping you for 28 straight seconds? Jesus, 28 seconds. That's like three decades in groped on camera years. This brings us to our newest segment. Joe Biden, you only have one job. As vice president, your mission is simple. You show up. You shake a couple of hands, you flash the pearlies, you get home in time for the Mindy Project. That's it. It's apparently a Senate rite of passage. You're not officially sworn in until Delaware Joe has felt up one female member of your immediately family.
I mean, so this stuff's been out there for a long time.
I want to be on the record, Tim, is when I found out that Obama picked him, I was perplexed. As somebody who's seen Joe Biden relatively up close through the years.
Oh, that's an easy answer. Come on. It's obvious. Oh, it's because
assassination protection?
No, it's because Biden said he was clean and articulate.
Oh, there you go.
Clean.
The compliments.
We're still trying to parse that word of why he called Obama clean, but we digress.
Yeah.
Okay, but that was John Stewart. That's out there a lot. There's stuff that, like from Alex Jones, that chronicles an incredible number of times that he's done this groping in public.
I have the documents.
Pretty much. Well, he's got all the footage.
Right.
In this case, he's actually got the footage, and then he's got the ominous voice.
Uh-huh. Do you think he's going to – well, this is the takeaway I want at the end of your segment. Has the previous week – what has the previous week's impact been on Joe Biden's plans to be president of the United States? I think that tweet means he's not giving up. I think that tweet means he's doubling down, and we're going to see an announcement soon. That's sort of my takeaway.
I think he cannot resist. The polls would show him at the top of the heap, even though it's all name recognition, and he's at 28%, and you got Bernie at about 24%, and then the rest of them are down in teens or below. I don't think he can resist it. This is his last chance to run.
And he had a long list, Tim, of the... Like, they played a clip on The View defending him. And Mika Brzezinski said, obviously, because Mika Brzezinski likes Joe Biden and his politics, she would be, sad if he didn't give her a hug and a kiss.
And a 28-second shoulder rub.
And, the fact that he does it to basically underlings or people that work for him or people that have a vast differential in power when they're waiting to go on and give a speech and makes them feel creepy, well, Mika just says, grow up, I guess.
I would say this, after that, one of the most disastrous decisions I've seen by an impending presidential candidate, which was Pocahontas undergoing that DNA test.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, my thought was, oh, she's so humiliated now. I mean, this is going to be the source of endless comedy and ridicule. And she's running anyway, acts as if it's not there. So maybe Biden will try to do that, too. I mean, and he's going to have to. He's going to have to. He's going to have to be able to compartmentalize all of that and somehow come up with an answer. I'm not sure he can. I mean, I don't think he can resist. But once he gets in, if he thinks it's bad now, what's it going to be like when he gets in? And it's not just Pocahontas and maybe Kamala Harris who say they believe Lucy Flores. They'll be attacking him. They'd be attacking him in the debates anyway because his name is at the top of the list.
Mm-hmm.
But with this in his in their quiver, the other, two dozen candidates, you think they're not going to go after him even more than they would have simply by virtue of him being the front runner? Oh, they will. It's just a matter of how bad does he want it? And I don't think anybody knows at this point.
Do you expect more women to come out in the near term? Any short-term predictions here?
Well, we've already had five, right? Two of them specific and then three more piled on. I think there will be some more because they're, like you said, over all the years, you had me do the math, but you were making the point that with over all these years.
A lot of those women are in Delaware, too. In other words, so that's actually that's actually like the real, what do you call it, the mother load of that, to be sure. So, but the problem is for them to come out, he and, Chris Coons and, you joked around before about they all just kind of like switch offices over there. It's very incestuous, I guess, is the word for it. But closed off in terms of who gets to run. My point is that there's a lot of power. If you live in Delaware and you tell that story, that's a lot braver than living in Nevada and doing so.
No, that's certainly true. I read an interesting piece today. I think it was in the New York Times, some sort of establishment media outlet, I forget which, because I've read so many stories, to prepare for being the Biden Appreciate correspondent that. For the uprising, which is consuming, it's consuming, frankly, about 95% of my time these days, Scott. But the, you know, the way they built the story was that everybody said, Joe Biden, great guy, love him, really hope he doesn't run. That was sort of the consensus, like, almost like he's going to destroy his legacy by running. He'll be defined by being creepy Uncle Joe as opposed to being, you know, Obama's obedient vice president and the guy that rode the Amtrak up and down to, you know.
Okay, and on that note, Joe Biden for president correspondent, Tim Donner. Thank you so much for your report, Tim. Thank you for joining us again on The Uprising.
I'm sorry it couldn't have been longer, Scott.
Ciao. Well, rust never sleeps, nor does Joe Biden's propensity for making a gaffe. He, on Friday, was giving a speech before an electrical workers union, and he proceeded to hug the head of the union who brought him on stage, and some kids were on stage, too, being brought up, and he hugged them and made a joke about it.
I just want you to know I had permission to hug Lonnie. I mean, by the way, he gave me permission to touch him. Right?
That he referred to in the previous clip as a little boy that Biden hugs on the stage. Well, leaving aside the capacity to consent to such an invasion of one's personal space by the vice president, he didn't quite get the message, which was that he wasn't supposed to joke about it. That these victim survivors, his victim survivors, deserve compassion and understanding. Well, here we go.
It wasn't my intent to make light of anyone's discomfort. I realize my responsibility is to not invade the space of anyone who is uncomfortable in that regard.
So it will be another long weekend in the Tony suburbs of Wilmington where Joe Biden learns or is screamed at to just keep his mouth shut and not commit a forced error, which does seem to be his specialty. You know what he needs? He needs some kind of a lifeline, some sort of phone-a-friend option. What could Joe do? What about the Big O? No, not Oprah Winfrey. She's busy getting Stacey Abrams elected Secretary General of the United Nations or something like that. No, the Big O, the President of the United States, his brother-in-arms for 8 years. Barack Obama is still pretty popular, especially with the Democrat electorate, right? What does he have to say? Well, rest assured that Obama strongly supports his vice president, but on double secret support is how he's prepared to go about it. This is from Politico, and the story is Obama is quiet as Biden comes under attack. He goes on to say, people close to the former president say he is standing behind Biden amid allegations from 7 women that the former vice president made them uncomfortable by touching them inappropriate at public events. President Obama thinks the world of him and thinks he'd be an excellent president, said a source close to Obama who had spoken to him and recently told The Hill. He spent an infinite amount of time talking about his character and they remain in touch and good friends, the source said. Here's the good part. President Obama is not going to be weighing in on the primary and the day-to-day stories around it, the source said. And Joe Biden would be the first to tell you that he'll have to earn the nomination on his own. Well, that just tells you that Obama's prepared to let him just get run over and backed over by the bus, forward and back. If he's not going to come out and say anything, well, that is a deafening silence. This is not some, Joe Biden's projected stimulus package, OMB numbers don't quite match up with what we're used to. No, that is a day-to-day campaign detail that the former president of the United States need not busy himself with. But this concerns whether or not Biden is able to enter the race at all. And the fact that he's has shut up about it, well, that tells you what he thinks of Biden. Biden made a fool of himself by floating the idea that Stacey Abrams was going to be his a potential vice presidential candidate. Apparently nobody checked with her, and she said no because, of course, he's a white guy, so he's disqualified. I was shocked when listening to ABC. It's funny. I do still have the capacity to be shocked or surprised by the legacy media, and I was when listening to ABC News and their analysis of Biden, and this mention about the Stacey Abrams faux pas prompted this remark by Yvette Simpson. She's one of the panelists on This Week. The premiere news and analysis, policy analysis show that ABC presents. This is the level of insight we get there.
This has been a pretty tough pre-rollout.
I think that kind of floating Stacey Abrams without her buy-in.
And then her coming out and saying no.
It was so tone deaf to try whoever's plan that was or whoever's idea that was completely tone deaf, especially when it seems like you are pushing a black woman, a politician, very polished, to the side and saying, okay, be my number two, when she could very well run on her own. What was the thinking behind that?
Yeah. What was the thinking for thinking that Stacey Abrams might make a good vice presidential candidate when she very well may be a stellar presidential candidate? Really? Once again, another stunning display of ignorance combined with narrative-driven wishful thinking from the news. That was Yvette Simpson, a woman of color, CEO of Democracy for America, pushing the idea that Stacey Abrams is a viable presidential candidate on ABC News' premier politics weekly program? Stacey Abrams, for those of you who don't know, failed to win the most recent Georgia gubernatorial election. Prior to that, she successfully held a seat in the Georgia House of Representatives, the lower house, where her district comprised about 60,000 people. So that means if every single man, woman, child, and non-binary person in the district voted for her, and as if they somehow could be eligible to do so, that includes illegals and everybody else, you're talking about 60,000 votes. So we know that she didn't get 60,000 votes, but let's just say that she did. You're saying it's viable that she could win the presidency when the only race she's ever won could have been by that margin, could have been by that number? It's a bit ridiculous. But it's not if you're a woman of color, and Stacey Abrams is a woman of color. And the reason why that's important, if you ever listen to Stacey Abrams talk and then you hear about her and read about her, you may wonder, why is Stacey Abrams being pushed as this candidate that is going to be the next this and the next that? Now, she doesn't deliver on it, but that's how she's being pushed. Well, you'll never, ever hear a comment about Stacey Abrams by somebody pushing her candidacy that doesn't focus on her sex and her race, because that's what she is. She's an affirmative action candidate. She doesn't have the achievement. She's just got the right color and the right genitalia and the right guilt trip for the rest of us why she should win. And it's because of her race and her sex. And that's it. A couple weeks ago, we instituted the new holiday Power Hour to combat the Earth Hour loonies. Well, I want to start a new holiday starting next week on April 13 for Christopher Hitchens Memorial Day. For you youngsters out there, Hitchens was a true original, an iconoclast, a stalwart and effective defender of free speech, and a man who, it seems, detested hypocrisy above all else. And he had this to say about he was asked about the presidential wives, and he had this to say about Michelle Obama. But I think it's absolutely applicable to Stacey Abrams, and dare I say, if Hitchens were alive today, he would apply it to her as well.
Like Mrs. Clinton in this respect, or these respects, combination of great good fortune in life, great privilege, great luck, and tremendous resentment about it. I think possibly that's the most unattractive form in which prejudice can be met in this country, is the rage of the entitled at how they didn't get it all right, handed to them on a skewer with a gollop of Bernaise.
Well said, and rest in peace, Mr. Hitchens. Okay. We will have to rest in peace until the next episode of The Uprising. Thanks so much for joining us. Go to libertynation.com for great conservatarian content 24/7, 365. Please like, comment, and subscribe. It does help the show. Ciao.